The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Money.com. Our first article, an interesting one, tariff checks. Will Trump actually send you a $2,000 dividend? This article by Pete Grieve. In a series of social media posts this week, President Donald Trump pledged to send $2,000 tariff checks to taxpayers under a certain income level. This isn't the first time Americans have heard about possible stimulus checks in 2025, and previous proposals for direct payments did not lead to any money in consumers' pockets. This time around may be no different. As the Supreme Court weighs the legal challenge to the administration's tariffs, Trump took to Truth Social Sunday to attack critics of his trade policy, calling them fools. In the post, the president went on to propose $2,000 payments that would be funded with money the government is taking in from tariffs. A dividend of at least $2,000 a person, not including high-income people, will be paid to everyone, Trump wrote. On Monday, he added in another post that all money left over from the $2,000 payments will be used to substantially pay down the national debt. The president's remarks sparked excitement and questions, especially about the timeline for these payments, given that prices are rising and many consumers are tightening their budgets ahead of the holidays. But details about Trump's vision, including the income cutoffs for tariff checks, are scarce. What we do know, however, is there are some key obstacles to Americans actually getting these $2,000 dividend payments. First, the president can't send tariff checks without Congress approval. The collection of custom duties that is resulting from these tariffs is essentially a federal collection, and the decision to increase spending or change or reduce spending or increase taxes or reduce taxes lies with Congress, not with the administration. EY Parathon chief economist Gregory Dako tells Money. Noting how hard it's been for Congress to fund the government and pass a budget, Dako questioned whether a big spending bill to send out tariff checks would make it very far. I would doubt that in the absence of a notable contraction in economic activity, there would be an appetite to pass any form of stimulus, Dako says. The GOP has thin margins in Congress, meaning Trump would need to somehow sway lawmakers in his own party who are highly concerned about deficits and debt. When Trump and Tesla CEO Elon Musk floated $5,000 Dodge dividend checks earlier in the year, several high-profile legislators, including House Speaker Mike Johnson, came out against them. That doesn't bode well for the tariff check proposal. In July, when Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, introduced a bill that would create tariff rebates of at least $600 per person, the legislation didn't gain steam immediately. The bill was assigned to the Senate Finance Committee, where it hasn't moved since. Economists also say that tariff revenue wouldn't cover the cost of sending $2,000 to all low- and middle-income taxpayers. A tariff check in the ballpark of what Hawley proposed may actually be more realistic economically than the $2,000 amount Trump suggested. According to the nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, $2,000 checks would cost about $600 billion if they followed the same framework as the COVID-era stimulus checks. So far in 2025, the U.S. has collected an additional $142 billion from tariffs, DECO notes. If you annualize the tariff-induced customs duties collection, you get somewhere around $300 to $350 billion. So even if you were to look at a one-for-one annual estimate of the checks and annual estimate of the tariffs collected through 2026, you would only finance about half of that, he says. In other words, tariff checks would increase the deficit and the national debt and ultimately lead to upward pressure on long-term interest rates, he says. On Monday, Johnson acknowledged in a Fox Business interview that, quote, there's some merit to the tariff dividend idea. But he then went on to cast doubt on whether it's the right use of tariff dollars. If you have trillions of dollars in new revenue, what's the best use for it? Should you pay down the debt? Because that saves families a lot of money in the long run and puts us back on sound fiscal trajectory, Johnson said. So there'll be some intense fellowship over that, as we say in the Deep South, about what to do with this revenue. Our next article, also from Money.com, are you wealthy or just comfortable? Here's the difference. This article by Adam Hardy. What's the difference between feeling financially comfortable and bona fide wealthy? Apparently, it's about $1.5 million. To feel financially comfortable in 2025, Americans now say it takes a net worth of $839,000 on average, according to Charles Schwab, Knight's annual Modern Wealth Survey released Wednesday. To feel financially wealthy, however, it takes a lot more, a net worth of $2.3 million. Much of the $1.5 million difference boils down to how people define, quote, financially comfortable and, quote, wealthy. The concept of wealth can feel distant, abstract, or even aspirational, while financial comfort is something people might see as more tangible and associated with the everyday realities they're facing right now. Rob Williams, Managing Director of Financial Planning at Charles Schwab, said in commentary shared with Money, both are important when it comes to understanding and managing your full financial picture. The net worth readings for both, quote, wealthy and, quote, financially comfortable are the second highest on record at Schwab. Last year, Americans said $2.5 million made them feel wealthy, whereas $778,000 made them feel comfortable. The highest reading for financially comfortable was $1 million in 2023. Schwab's wealth survey was fielded in April and May and includes responses from more than 2,000 U.S. adults aged 21 to 75 who had average household earnings of $84,000. Net worth is a popular measure of total wealth that looks at the value of assets, such as savings and property, minus liabilities, such as debts. It's a broader financial reading than just earnings. When it comes to salaries, separate research shows most Americans say they need to make at least $200,000 to feel rich. Feeling wealthy? That might depend on your age. As with most financial topics, there are stark divides among the different generations on how they feel about wealth. Generally speaking, young adults say they need less money than their older counterparts to feel comfortable or wealthy. 20-somethings are also more likely to say they already feel comfortable and wealthy. Here's a look at the responses by age group. The Gen Z folks, born 1997 to 2003, said a net worth to feel financially comfortable in 2025 would be about $329,000. Millennials, 1981 to 1996, $347,000. Gen Xers, 1965 to 1980, $783,000. And Boomers, born 1948 to 1964, said the net worth to feel financially comfortable would be $943,000. The same group looking at net worth to feel wealthy in 2025, Gen Z, 1.7 million, Millennials, 2.1 million, Gen Xers, 2.1 million, and Boomers, 2.8 million. Respondents were also asked if they think they will ever be wealthy in their lifetime. Gen Zers, 43%, and Millennials, 42%, were far more likely to say they are, quote, wealthy now, or, quote, on track to be wealthy. Only 33% of Gen Xers and 20% of Boomers say the same. Boomers' financial pessimism reigns here, as it does in certain other areas of their finances, despite the generation having far higher net worths than younger adults. For instance, separate Schwab data shows the typical brokerage account balance for boomer investors is over $560,000. For millennial investors, it's less than $125,000. On top of that, boomers on average have higher home ownership rates, 401k balances, and salaries than Gen Z and millennial adults. The financial optimism expressed by younger Americans could be stemming from financial preparation, as Gen Zers and millennials were more likely than the other group in the wealth survey to have reported creating a formal plan for their financial goals in life. Meanwhile, 45% of boomers say they, quote, don't have a financial plan of any kind. Will you need long-term care? Here's what the statistics say. This article by Caitlin Mulhere. The number of Americans who live past 85 is expected more than double in the next 25 years, the Census Bureau projects, leading to a surge in demand for long-term care. Long-term care involves helping an older adult manage activities of daily living, encompassing everything from grocery store shopping and preparing meals to getting dressed and using the bathroom. As many as 7 in 10 older adults will require some level of help, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. If you live a long life, the chances of needing long-term care are increasingly high, says Jesse Sloan, executive director of the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance. That help can range from unpaid, part-time caregiving from family members to shelling out thousands of dollars a month for a nursing home. Understanding the likelihood of eventually needing long-term care and then mapping out your options is a critical part of planning for growing older, experts say. Yet surveys suggest many Americans aren't doing so. Less than half of adults say they've had a serious conversation with a loved one about who will take care of them if they need help with daily activities, or how they would pay for care, according to a survey from KFF, a nonprofit health policy organization. Well, how many people actually need long-term care? Despite plenty of media coverage about an impending long-term care crisis, most adults still underestimate their individual risk for needing extensive care when they get older. While many older adults will be able to get by with help a few times a week, over half, 52% of adults aged 65 and up, will have high intensity needs for at least a few months, according to a recent report from the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. People with high intensity needs require help with two or more daily activities or have a dementia diagnosis. The risk for this more intensive care varies by education, race, and gender. Some 56% of women will need more intensive, longer-term care compared with 46% of men, researchers found. Black and Hispanic adults are also more likely than white adults to need a high-intensity care, with 57% of each group needing it compared with 50% of white older adults. Across all races, those with college degrees are less likely to need it than those with high school diplomas. How do people pay for long-term care? 46% of adults said they thought Medicare would pay for a nursing home if they needed it, according to research from the AARP. That, experts say, is one of the biggest misunderstandings around this issue. Medicare does not pay for long-term care. Most long-term care giving, nearly two-thirds, is actually handled via unpaid help from family members, a 2021 study from the Center for Retirement Research found. Some 33% of caregiving hours provided to individuals 65 and older come from children, with another 17% from spouses. If you do end up needing professional care, though, the price tag can be steep. In 2024, the median annual cost of assisted living facilities averaged around $70,800, and an in-home health aide topped $77,000, according to Genworth Financial, which sells long-term care insurance. Nursing homes are typically the priciest option, with a private room costing an average of $127,750. Semi-private rooms are slightly more affordable at $111,325 a year. Medicaid is the most common source for paying these costs, yet only lower-income retirees with no assets or those who've spent down all their assets can qualify. After Medicaid, the Center for Retirement Research reports that about 8% of long-term care was paid for out of pocket and 4% was covered through insurance. Those figures track with industry statistics. LIMRA estimates about 3% of people older than 50 have a long-term care insurance policy, and more than a quarter of adults without a standalone long-term care insurance policy cite cost as the reason why. Long-term care insurance prices are based on age, gender, and your current and recent over the past several years' health. As with all insurance products, premiums vary based on the coverage level you select. For a 60-year-old purchasing a long-term care plan with a $165,000 benefit level and a 2% inflation protection, the typical annual premium is $2,060 for a single male and $3,325 for a single female, according to the Long-Term Care Insurance Association. Prices for women are consistently higher because they typically live longer, meaning they're more likely to need long-term care. Sometimes needing long-term care can get conflated with needing long-term care insurance. Dick Weber, who offers fee-only insurance advising, previously told Money. Needing that care is a reality for many, but buying long-term care insurance is still a relatively uncommon decision. If you are thinking about buying insurance coverage, Weber recommends you start researching your options in your 50s. Premiums tend to jump after age 65, and denial rates spike as you get older, too. Our next article, from inflation to AI gift ideas. Here's how holiday shopping will be different this year. This article by Julia Glum. Holiday shopping is on track to be like everything else in 2025, a roller coaster ride. The National Retail Federation now predicts that retail sales in November and December will surpass $1 trillion, growing by as much as 4.2% from last year, despite concerns from shoppers about rising prices. As Black Friday promotions flood inboxes and Christmas commercials become downright inescapable, Americans are taking steps to adjust their priorities, spend smarter, and pay on their own terms. Here are three major trends you can expect to see this holiday shopping season. Everyone's worried about the economy. Shoppers are feeling the pinch from multiple angles, retail expert Wendy Berg, chief marketing officer at Rakuten Rewards, writes in an email. Inflation is still very real, but we're also seeing financial pressures from rising tariffs and lingering concerns about personal finances. Although most Americans still haven't started to feel the full effects of President Donald Trump's tariff policies, many are struggling to make ends meet and worrying about what happens next. Retailers, meanwhile, are changing up their supply chains and stocking strategies, which could lead to shortages of items like toys and festive decor. According to Lupine Skelly, Deloitte's retail wholesale and distribution research leader, auxiliary holiday expenses, think pictures with Santa at the mall and nutcracker tickets, are on the chopping block. Presents, largely safe. People are saying, I'm willing to cut here. Let's see what I can do to keep the gifts up, she adds. Indeed, the majority of people are planning to spend about the same amount of money on gifts that they did last year, according to a Gallup poll released Tuesday. Trends vary by generation and income level, but the average per person spend shakes out to an average of $1,007. People are still in the, quote, wait-and-see attitude, says Dana Bodine, Vice President of Marketing at Trustpilot. What I think is completely changing is the consumer purchasing journey. And that's a perfect lead-in to forget elves. AI is going to help you shop. When money is tight, shoppers get creative. Gen Z, which is one age group that does plan to significantly cut back on holiday spending, is looking for deals and figuring out ways to make the holidays happen, Skelly says. So in addition to comparison shopping and checking out product recommendations, they're calling in the big guns, artificial intelligence. PayPal found that 61% of Gen Zers born between 1997 and 2012 and 57% of millennials but born 1981 to 1996 have used AI to help them buy something in the past year, and they're not stopping anytime soon. Adobe predicts that AI traffic to retail sites will jump by 520% this holiday season. Skelly says, we'll see people use AI to personalize gift lists, find ideas, stick to a budget, and find top-rated items. And Bodine says, we're on the list of commerce, which works like a virtual personal shopper. All you have to do is tell an AI chatbot, hey, I'm shopping for my friend Dana. She owns a Subaru. She needs something quick and easy because she has a young son. I'm willing to spend $99 to $150. If you can find XYZ at that price, please buy it for me and send it to my house. People are seeking new ways to pay later. There are some worrisome trends emerging around how folks actually pay for their holiday shopping. A July poll found that 27% of millennials plan to take on credit card debt in order to cover their holiday expenses, and 40% of Gen Zers are ready to use their savings. It doesn't have to be this way. In the face of financial uncertainty, consumers are savvier than ever, Berg says. This means combining discounts, incentives, free shipping, cash back, and loyalty points to help stretch their dollars. This season, stacking deals isn't a hack. It's the new normal, she adds. Shoppers are also relying on buy now, pay later, or BNPL. PayPal found that half of people surveyed intend to use buy now, pay later for their holiday shopping. Although popular, the payment method comes with a whole host of pros and cons. On one hand, BNPL can help make big ticket purchases affordable by breaking them into multiple interest-free pieces. On the other, it can tempt you to overspend, rack up hidden fees, and accumulate debt. It's common for BNPL users, especially low-income and young ones, to miss payments and have multiple BNPL loans going at once. To avoid landing in an unfortunate financial cycle, you'll need to strategize. And we are now out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope you'll join us again next time. I'm Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thanks you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.